degrees now in Jacksonville, but feels like 96 at Talk Radio WBOB.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, Medical Director and Physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. There's a well-known saying that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. This is not only true in medicine and in general daily living, but in politics as well.
There is a policy being considered in the state of Oregon that, if allowed to become law in that state, could influence policies in other states, including Florida.
And now is the time to begin action to make sure that it does not become a consideration of the powers that be in our state. I have also heard the saying that often the simplest solution is the best. Unfortunately, sometimes it is not. There is an opioid crisis in the U.S., and certainly medicine has to address anything that worsens that crisis.
We do need more access to safe and effective treatment for those that are addicted to opioids. And we must, as a nation, be able to provide safe, effective, and affordable treatments for opioid addiction.
But we must also provide the same, that is, safe, effective, and affordable treatments for chronic pain, a generalized symptom of many diseases that, at this time, often include the use of opioid pain medications for effective treatment.
Many people and families in the U.S. are covered to some degree by health insurance, and most of these depend on the economic help from these insurance companies to cover treatments of their medical problems.
Often, without their health insurance, they are unable to receive adequate or appropriate treatment.
While most healthcare providers, as well as government agencies and medical societies, agree that chronic pain relief should begin with the safest and, if possible, more effective treatments, this becomes difficult if the patient is unable to get that treatment when it is not affordable.
By that, we mean that often these very treatments, which both healthcare providers and government agencies that control healthcare in the U.S. recommend, is simply not covered at all by insurers or inadequately covered by these same entities. So let's talk about the obvious problems with this type of policy. First, we have three major concerns with the policy. This policy relies on the availability of patients to other successful treatment modalities. That is, patients with chronic pain. Virtually no treatment modalities work for everyone. Many procedures used to help alleviate pain have only a 20% or less success rate. And this would not be a problem if the medical practitioner could try all forms in order to find the best, most successful, and safe treatment.
The problem is that in real life, even those with insurance coverage cannot often get these treatments since they may not be a covered entity.
We all know that a single physical therapy session is simply not enough to treat chronic pain. Often it is suggested that therapies be used at least twice a week for several weeks or months before deeming them successful or unsuccessful.
And what about those without insurance coverage? Who pays for this treatment, which can cost $400 or more a week in addition to medications prescribed?
Until insurance companies are required to cover a procedure, again, such as massage therapy, acupuncture, yoga, etc., many chronic pain sufferers will be without relief. And we haven't even addressed the fact that in many rural communities, these procedures aren't even available or accessible.
So what if a patient under these proposed rules suffers an increase in pain or a decrease in function while in the tapering phase of treatment?
The proposed rules mention nothing as to what the physician must or is able to do. Can he raise the dose for a short period or for a long period of time? What can the patient expect? Is the physician to tell the patient, "Well, Mrs. Jones, I understand that you're taking your medication down from the previous dose that appeared to help you. So once we get to a dose where the pain is unbearable, well, we'll stop right then and there. What do you think of that, Mrs. Jones?"
And contrary to what the public has been led to believe concerning the current prescribing practice of opioids in the treatment of chronic pain and what the CDC of Center of Disease Control has said about it, the fact is that the Oregon proposal is unsupported by current treatment guidelines related to opioid prescribing, including those issued by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, in 2016, and the U.S. Veterans Administration, as well as multiple professional medical associations.
The CDC guideline does not provide support for involuntary or precipitous tapering. Precipitous tapering of opioids could be associated with withdrawal symptoms and patients obtaining opioids from other sources. Under the accepted guidelines for patients with managed risk who experience a loss of function or an escalation in pain, tapering should cease. Again, this is not accounted for in the Oregon policy.
Among the expert objections in the CDC guideline was the lack of evidence of benefit from compelled tapering.
There is also a lot of evidence that there would be significant harm to those chronic pain patients who would be affected by this Oregon policy. This harm ranges from medical decline all the way to suicide. In reality, we need to offer the services such as CBT, physical therapy, occupational therapy, massage therapy, chiropractic therapy, as well as acupuncture alongside medications.
The reality is, at this moment, and for some patients, access to opioid medications to manage their daily pain is necessary.
Of course, for others, non-pharmacological methods also provide sufficient relief. And for many patients, well, it's a combination of both.
At this moment, there is not a single procedure, medication, or what we would like to call a magic pill for all patients.
And the ones that will be most affected by this new Oregon policy may just be those that have Medicaid coverage, as these patients may be more likely to have a disproportionate number of disabilities and may be the sickest patients and those with multiple chronic conditions. So what is the ultimate goal that everyone seeks? I guess that it is getting those who use opioid and other addictable drugs, not for medical reasons, but for non-medical reasons, to stop using these drugs and be able to lead normal, fruitful, and happy, healthy lives without being addicted. I'm sure that there are better ways to say it, but we want to look at the ultimate goal.
If that, or something similar, is the ultimate goal, then stopping those who presently take medication for their chronic pain as part of their treatment regimen is not the way to be successful.
Curtailing opioid prescribing is simply not correlated with a reduction in drug overdose deaths. Although prescribing has dropped every year since 2012, drug overdose deaths during the same period have skyrocketed, as the crisis really involves heroin and illicitly manufactured fentanyl and its analogs. Even most deaths that involve a prescription opioid are polypharmacy.
This means that most often mortality and morbidity related to drug overdose includes not just prescription drugs, but mainly includes illicit drugs, benzodiazepines and other central nervous system depressants and alcohol.
And the fact is that this misuse is most often, again, as we said, non-medical. So now that we have tried to explain this, you might be asking, why are we so critical of a policy that relates to only one state, the state of Oregon, so far from Florida? But these things often have a way, let's call it, for lack of a better term, the domino effect. Should such a policy be put in place, the immediate results, at least statistically, could look favorable. Maybe those that were getting opioid medication as part of their treatment regimen and who are no longer receiving the medication simply decide to move out of state. Or maybe they turn to the black market or illegal drugs.
So statistics may show a marked decrease in the use of prescription drugs by the Oregon population and give us all a false idea that the program was successful.
Could this lead to other states, including our own Florida, to consider similar programs? We need other policies to help the crisis that our population is in now, not forced abstention. This has never worked and won't work now. This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburgh Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. For the final 15 minutes of the show, Carmen and I would really like to use the time to give you health suggestions that you can really use. For example, let's take exercise. Now, for some, exercise is a four-letter word.
Some cycle and some visit a gym to lift heavy weights and a lot in between.
But regardless of the type of exercise, most do it to improve their health.
So you have decided to get healthier. Exercise is in your agenda. What do you do?
Well, you could read the results of a new study published in the Scientific Journal of Clinical Investigation, Insight. Or you could just let us read it for you and tell you about it.
This study showed that cardio training on an exercise bike causes three times as large an increase in the production of the hormone FGF21 than strength training with weights.
Wow, that sounds important. And it is. You see, hormone FGF21 has a lot of positive effects on metabolism. This term, FGF21, has a meaning. After all, who could come up with that term without some ulterior motive? Anyway, FGF21 stands for, drum roll please, fibroblast growth factor 21. This hormone is a key mediator of fatty acid oxidation and lipid or fat metabolism.
Pharmacological dose of FGF21 improve glucose tolerance, lower serum free fatty acids, and lead to weight loss in the obese mice.
In fact, the researchers have studied the effects on 10 healthy young men who had been randomly divided into two groups and did both forms of training once a week. Training was fairly hard and lasted 60 minutes.
Thus, the cardio exercise consisted of cycling at a level of 70% maximum oxygen intake, while the strength training consisted of 5 exercises repeated 10 times and involved the main muscle groups in the body.
Then 8 blood samples were taken from the participants over a period of 4 hours in order to measure the development in blood sugar, lactic acid, various hormones, and bile acid in the body. So let's get to the nitty-gritty of the results. There was a significant increase in the production of the hormone FGF21 in connection with cardio exercise, while strength training showed no significant change, at least with regard to this hormone.
So, it seems that endurance training on a bicycle has a marked effect on this metabolic hormone.
FGF21's potential as a drug against diabetes, obesity, and similar metabolic disorders is currently being tested. So the fact that we are able to increase the production ourselves through training is, to say the least, and as Art Johnson from the TV show Laugh-In would say,
very interesting.
But the researchers didn't stop there. They measured another hormone called FGF19.
Again, fibroblast growth factor 19.
This is also a protein that functions as a hormone. It regulates bile acid synthesis, which affects glucose and lipid metabolism.
Two similar name hormones, FGF21, FGF19, with similar effects on sugar and fat in the body. You'd think that strength training would have the same effect on both. But you would be wrong.
In actuality, the production of the growth hormone FGF19 actually drops slightly after strength training. More research is, of course, needed on both these hormones in relation to aging.
Darn Drosophila melanogaster. I should have said, darn fly. Sometimes, though, they are useful. Like in forensics, when their presence in a cadaver can help determine time of death. But fruit flies can be very interesting. Anyway, the Drosophila melanogaster, commonly known as the fruit fly, is often used in medical research.
For a number of reasons, it can be readily reared in the laboratory, has only 4 pairs of chromosomes, breeds quickly, and lays lots of eggs.
Science now tells us that we are what the bacteria living in our intestinal tract eat, and this could have an influence on how well we age. Scientists at McGill University fed fruit flies with a combination of probiotics and an herbal supplement called Trifala that was able to prolong the fly's longevity by 60% and protect them against chronic diseases associated with aging.
The flies were fed with what is called a symbiotic, that is a combination of probiotics and a polyphenol-rich supplement.
The flies fed with the symbiotic lived up to 66 days old, 26 days more than the ones without the supplement. They also showed reduced traits of aging such as mounting insulin resistance, inflammation, and oxidative stress.
It appears that probiotics do change the architecture of the gut microbiota, not only in the composition, but also in respect to how the foods that we eat are metabolized.
I was really surprised to find out that the lowly fruit fly is remarkably similar to mammals, with about 70% similarity in terms of their biochemical pathways, making it a good indicator of what would happen in humans.
The results of this study suggest that a diet specifically incorporating Triphala along with these probiotics will promote a long and healthy life.
The authors of the study also said that the findings can be explained by the gut-brain axis, a bidirectional communication system between microorganisms residing in the gastrointestinal tract, the microbiota, and the brain. Now, if you're one of the Hey Doc Show fanatics, then you'll remember our talk on the brains in our guts months back.
In the past few years, studies have shown the gut-brain axis to be involved in neuropathological changes and a variety of conditions such as irritable bowel syndrome, neurodegeneration, and even depression.
So now you might be wondering where you can get the Triphala. Is it even available? Well, first, it's a formulation made from amalaki, bibitaki, and harataki, which are fruits used as medicinal plants in Ayurveda, a form of traditional Indian medicine. Again, wondering where you can get it? Well, we looked it up at Amazon and Thrive Market and found it there.
The author of this study said that he hopes that their formulation could have interesting applications in several diseases, including diabetes, obesity, neurodegeneration, chronic inflammation, depression, and as we said before, irritable bowel syndrome, and even cancer. If you or any of your family members have been prescribed any medication that are being rejected or denied at the pharmacy, and you feel that the medication is both appropriate and medically necessary, then you need to make your voice known. Contact your state and federal representatives and tell them what's happening. It is only with this that we can right the wrongs that are being perpetrated on a large part of our citizenry and their human rights when they are denied appropriate and necessary treatment.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.